Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's nice to be back. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Monday. So glad you're with us today. It is Monday, July 24th, and we've had a busy weekend here in the greater Twin Cities of Minneapolis, and we are going to have a discussion this morning about some of the activity that's gone on over the weekend because it has become an international story. And it's one of those things that we've been a little reluctant to speak about to this point, but I mean, how long could you talk to a relative at a picnic if they had a huge piece of spinach on a tooth? I mean, you know, what is the most troubling is you know for a fact that there's no spinach being served at the picnic. So you kind of wonder how long it's been there. But at some point, you got to say something. And now we're going to talk about it this morning. There has been a paucity of information. Big word today, Bill. Nice job. Yeah, I just got a thumbs up from Rebecca because she loves big words. And that is mean just a scarcity of information that we've received from the Minneapolis Police Department regarding the shooting of Justin Damon. Now, we're going to have a conversation this morning on several different levels. One, we're going to start with Patrick Albanese in a minute. We're also going to have a conversation with Dr. Linda Mintel about some of the psychology of stressful news. And then Pastor John Somerville later in the next hour is going to give a perspective from a pastor's standpoint on what's going on in our city. Actually, his church is about six blocks away from where the shooting took place. So we have a busy day, and in the middle of all that, we're going to have a conversation with Ruth Kramer as well from Mission Network News. So looking forward to that. But to get our eyes fixed on the right place, let's look at Psalm 119. It says in verse 18, "Open my eyes that I might see wonderful things in your law." Verse 24 says, "Your statutes are my delight, they are my counselors." And 28 says, "My soul is weary with sorrow. Strengthen me according to your word." So let's look at God's word this morning. Let's be strengthened by that. Let's put on a joyful face and know that we know how the story ends. So it's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and get my friend and colleague Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines on the Skype. Back in a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
And of course, that walk-up music is for Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. Got a piece of spinach between my teeth, in fact, as we... I actually carry that around, and I carry a piece of spinach around in a little container in my pocket intentionally, and I put it on my teeth at a picnic. That way I can find out who my real friends are.
It's a good bellwether, isn't it? Find out.
It is. If you don't say anything, I'm thinking, you're no friend of mine.
That's exactly right.
You're enjoying this. You're taking me down a peg.
Right.
Normally, I take myself down a peg.
Yeah, but, as do I. So
yes.
Anyway, this has been kind of the big elephant in the room here. So let's get the conversation going about what's happened in the Twin Cities. Now, an international news story. You have the Prime Minister of Australia saying, "I want answers." And of course, I'm referring to the shooting that took place a week ago yesterday, Saturday or Sunday. It was Saturday, yeah.
Yes.
Here in Minneapolis, and very controversial. A woman, Justine Damon, calls police because there has been a possible sexual assault in her alley that she's hearing a woman's voice yelling for help.
Yeah.
And she runs out to the police car, to the police driver's side in her bathrobe holding her cell phone, and ends up losing her life as the other officer in the passenger's seat obviously shoots his firearm across his partner and actually strikes Christine in the abdomen, and she dies 20 minutes later.
Yeah. And it's the longer that the officer that did the shooting goes without speaking. You know, when somebody, it's funny how somebody hunkers down, they always think, oh, they're hiding something. I remember during, the Obama administration when somebody would show up before Congress and plead the fifth. our more liberal friends would say, well, you know, they don't want to say anything to incriminate themselves. And I get that. And that's maybe what's happening here. But you think, boy, oh, boy, did you lawyer up quickly. And it's probably the smart thing to do, but it's so many unanswered questions. And all we have so much speculation that that's when things get messy, because you don't know what's the truth anymore. But this guy had his gun out for some reason in the passenger seat. I don't know if he was cleaning it. I don't know if he was just edgy. We know nothing about him. They won't release any information.
Right. And certainly we don't want to race to any conclusion. We want justice. We want a fair trial. We don't want to have anything hinder the investigation. So, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I've just kind of wanted to sit quietly and wait to see what is unfolding here. It's because it's a very volatile situation.
Yeah, and unfortunately what you get now is you'll get a bunch of opinion makers that do race to the conclusion. You and I, we're not that quick. We're just slow walkers to the conclusion, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
They do that, and then what happens is then that becomes the story. Then you have this speculation where people say, I heard somebody said, and I heard somebody said this, and I heard that there's a recording of somebody that was watching, you know, a rerun of The Honeymooners, and they just so happen to have their cell phone out. We went through this with the Mike Brown thing, and, you know, the story of the hands up, don't shoot, for instance, got spread worldwide and became fact when, in fact, it didn't happen. And so we do have to be very careful here not to do that. I mean, I've seen written reports of these supposed amazing quotes that Michelle Bachmann, for instance, said, but I'm having a very difficult time finding a recording of them. And like a woman like Michelle Bachmann has a tendency to be taken out of context because she is a favorite punching bag of people on the left. So they'll say, well, here's what she said. And then if you find the context or the quote, you say, you know, she didn't actually say that.
Yeah. And I know go ahead, Patrick.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
One of the things that the police chief, who's now resigned, was talking about at the press conference was all the progress they've made making the Minneapolis Police Department so 21st century with the body cam program and everything else. Yet, apparently neither of the body cams were turned on, and the dash cam wasn't turned on either. And, of course, you raised an interesting question over the weekend when we were talking. Is there a history in the last 8 months of these officers forgetting to turn on their body cams? And if so, did the department speak to them and discipline them?
Yeah, I mean, the program's been in place for 8 months. And so before the police chief became the ex-police chief, was sort of excusing and saying, well, these people are still getting, all of our officers are still getting used to it. And it's like, okay, did you have a system in place, for instance? Let's say you work at a place that has a time clock, and they never had a time clock before. And about 8 months into it, they're going, you know, we noticed you're not using the time clock. We're having a hard time paying you. Maybe if you would learn how to punch in. I mean, they would probably address it right away. You know, there'd be these company meetings, and you would think at maybe the police meetings, they'd say, okay, guys, please turn on the body cams. We just spent millions of dollars. Turn on the dash cam, turn on the body cams. And for the people who aren't doing it, there's going to be disciplinary action. Or did they just let this little thing go? Did these two officers, Harity and Noor, have a tendency to not turn on their cams? And did anybody talk to them and say, okay, guys, 8 months, come on, get with the program. You're new at this. You're supposed to be the adaptable cops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we understand a guy who's been here for 40 years and he's not used to something like that. But, I mean, you know, they throw that out there as if that explains everything. Well, they're not used to it. It's like, so have you talked to them about it? Or is this a one-off incident would be? And you know that there are going to be some savvy lawyers. And by the way, I want the Prime Minister of Australia to back me in anything. If I do anything, I'm going, just you talk to the Prime Minister of Australia. That guy's tough.
Oh, yeah, he is tough.
He's not backing down. He's like, look, I realize you're the little town of Minneapolis, but I'm the Prime Minister of Australia, you understand?
Yeah. Know? Well, I'll be curious.
He was built on the backs of crooks. So
yeah. I'll be curious to see if the biker who passed the crime scene, if he has any footage on his iPhone, whether it's audio or video as well. That would bring light to the situation. Of course, we don't really know any of this, and we're all waiting for more information. So I hate to sit on air and speculate about stuff. So I want to be careful how we treat this.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the average person these days, if they're riding their bike at, you know, what time was this? Midnight or something?
11:30 p.m.
Yeah, 11:30 p.m., you're riding your bike, and you go, look at those two cops trying to give CPR to that woman over there. I wonder if I should take out my cell phone and try to capture some of this. You got to think that that would be the tendency. It's like, what is going on here? People take out their cell phones, you know, to catch a hummingbird flying by a daylily. So they're going, well, you know, I think that this would qualify as something you'd want to capture. It's curious that none of that has come out. I see a you see some of the more radical websites are saying, you know, we've listened to the recording. And I always wonder, it's like, how did you guys, you know, the blogger in the basement, the ubiquitous blogger in the basement says, well, I've got a copy of that recording already. And let me tell you, something. How did you get it?
Yeah.
You know, the police have nothing and you have it.
Mm-hmm.
You are good.
Yeah. Well,
you don't get paid for what you do.
My instinct has been to pray for just about everybody in the situation. Pray for the families involved and the officers and everyone else. I mean, it's been interesting to watch how it has unfolded, and there's a lot more to come out, and we'll be curious to track that. Patrick, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Good morning and happy Monday. Be back in just a minute. Good morning, Bill Arnold here this morning on the Early Morning Late Show. Glad you're with us today. And I'm talking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. And we are just, Patrick, I'd like to move away from our top story. And then there's several other pieces of news I want to process with you. Scientist Bill Nye, fake scientist Bill Nye, says we need to move on with the aging process. In other words, old people need to die so we can eliminate all the climate science deniers.
Yeah,
they tend to be older people.
He says they tend to be older people. And I just love the, you know, you watch the vernacular. People choose their words very carefully, except for guys like you and me. Stuff just comes out and we have to walk it back every now and then. But he says, you know, climate change deniers. So I mean, it gets the hackles up. Whatever they are, they're up right now. And I think, you know, it's just one of those phrases. It's not even, you know, I disagree with you. I think this is the problem. They're going, well, you must be one of those deniers. And so, you know, that's the stab right there. And that, I find there are often euphemisms in our vernacular now that have crept in that are just alternative ways of telling people to shut their mouths. And that's one of them. It's like, well, you're a climate change denier, ergo, you're not allowed to speak. And but in Bill Nye's case, he says, you know what? It would actually be quite helpful if you would just get old and die.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can indoctrinate the new younger people with the fresh minds that haven't been brainwashed yet. They'll believe everything that we say about climate change, and then we can get them all to live in a 200-square-foot apartment while we – the regal we that gets to decide, you know, all things for all people, will live in the nice places. It's just ridiculous. And it's Bill Nye. Why are we listening to Bill Nye?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Like you said, his actual degree is in engineering. He's not a scientist. But he gets to be called Bill Nye the Science Guy because he had a public television show, which they don't pay very well, by the way. So he can't be that good of a scientist.
All right. A woman in Wichita who spends half of her time living in Wichita and half in Florida is this very gifted, talented makeup artist who entered a contest by the Kat Von D Beauty makeup company and won first prize. And she ended up with a prize package, which was around $2,100, trip to L.A. for the big party. And then, they took it back. And why did they take it back?
Well, Kat Von D actually contacted her and said, you know, we kind of been perusing your Instagram profile and saw that you, in November, had a Trump 2016 post up. And we just don't agree with his politics, and he's a hater, and that makes you a hater, and he's transphobic and misogynistic and blah, blah, you know, the usual stuff. And so she says, I just can't associate with people like you. And they took the prize back. And if you read any of the stories of the woman in Wichita, she was so gracious about it. You know, this actually happened a while ago. It wasn't like she was trying to get publicity over the whole thing, but the publicity found her. And she's like, hey, they can do what they want. They're a private company. But she said, it's kind of classless. And I'm thinking, you know, it is. And we see that with this boycott phenomena, this craziness where people say, you know, I can no longer associate with you because of what you believe. And they link it to Hitler. Everything goes to is that Godwin's law? You know, that every conversation eventually devolves to the point where they say, you're Hitler. Well, you're Hitler. And that's the end of the conversation. Uh-huh. Once it devolves to the, it's either Goodwin's or Godwin's law. One of those guys did it.
There are a couple of guys out there.
Yeah. So, of course, Kat Von D is basically saying, you know, you're like Hitler. You know, Hitler was bad. Trump's like Hitler. You like Trump. You're like Hitler. So we're taking the prize back. Uh-huh. And every day, by the way, just to, you know, sort of paraphrase Andy Warhol, all of us will be Hitler for 15 minutes.
Yeah. And it's the makeup company said, I just need you to know that I personally have a hard time with inviting anyone who would support such an anti-feminist, anti-homosexual, LGBT, anti-immigrant, and anti-climate change fascist such as Trump.
You know what? I've come to a discovery that the left side of the spectrum seems to be particularly unhinged over Trump, and the rest of the people say, I'm just going about my life. The guy's president. I'm just going to go do my thing. But I realize it's not that they're afraid of a Trump presidency so much. I think the biggest thing they're afraid of is that he'll be successful. Because if he's successful, if it turns out that he's not any of these things that they say, if all of these doom and gloom prognostications don't happen, and it turns out he's the most LGBT-friendly president that we've ever had, and if he's, you know, not the fascist that they say that he is, and if the economy rebounds and does these amazing, you know, these are all big ifs. I get that. But if that stuff happens, they will have a monstrous amount of egg on their face. And so I think they're kind of getting to the point, we need to stop them because it just might work and we can't have that. Mm-hmm. It's unacceptable. So, you know, it seems to be showing up everywhere, this Trump derangement syndrome. I'm thinking, oh, for crying out loud, you know, do you want to play the boycott game? We can all play the boycott game. I'm going to develop the boycott app, which tells you who you're supposed to be boycotting on any given day, depending on where you sit on the political spectrum. And it'll be tied in with my who am I supposed to be angry today at app and my outrage app, the outrage of the day.
Yeah, exhausting.
It's exhausting. You can't keep up with it, and it's ridiculous to even try. Go about your lives. We have things to do.
Yes, we do. All right, Patrick, 63-year-old Colorado resident Tim Gill, who's a tech millionaire, and is an extremely liberal LGBTQ activist, said he's going to take his $400 million plus and spend every last penny moving forward with the LGBT social reform causes.
Yeah, I mean, he's already spent over $400 million. And if you read into some of these articles, you have to kind of dig for him. And you'll find out that he has been doing this for years, and he has always hid who he was. He's given, you know, pseudonyms and various names to various different organizations that he started up and organized. He didn't want stuff traced to him. He didn't want to be in the spotlight. But he's basically taken Christians and put crosshairs on him and said, I'm coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that some of his efforts behind, for instance, making gay marriage the law of the land is he's going to be the guy that's behind the lawsuits that eventually land on church doorsteps. That say, you know what, you refuse to marry this gay couple, you know, and you're not allowed to do that. I mean, he's going to be the guy pursuing that. And I'm trying to, maybe you'll remember he had a saying, it's time to punish the sinners, I think is what he said.
That is what he said.
Yeah, yeah. He's taken the almost, I don't want to say the Christian wording, but that is it. And he says, it's time to punish the sinners. And he's basically saying, all you Christians are sinners. We know that. Mm-hmm. We get that.
Yeah.
But he has decided that he is the guy to punish everybody. And darn it, you're going to accept his agenda or pay the price. And he's willing to put hundreds of millions of dollars behind the effort to destroy you, your church. It's kind of frightening stuff, but I guess we should expect that.
Yeah. And finally,
Bible might have said something about that.
Yeah. And finally, yeah. In Philippians, it says that, you know, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So as Christians, we have to look at all these stressful news stories. And despite all that, we have to focus our mind through spiritual disciplines on things that are lovely and pure and admirable and excellent and praiseworthy.
Well, hence the NFL. That's why we retreat to sports on Sunday and say, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah.
What a play. Yeah. I think they're great words of advice, and it becomes increasingly difficult because, you know, unfortunately, the sensational and the negative tend to get clicks, tend to get eyes to the newspaper, and we just can't seem to get enough of it. I don't want to say I'm ashamed of myself for falling into that trap, but I certainly do it a lot.
Yeah.
And go, ooh, this is somewhat salacious. Look at these horrible things people are doing and saying, and doesn't that just make me better? Maybe I'm not as bad a Christian as I thought I was because I'm not as bad as that guy. And the next thing you know, I've gone full Philistine, and right. You don't want to do that.
All right, Patrick, we got to run. Thanks so much for being on the show. I'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
You bet. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back more coming up after the news with Ruth Kramer at 6:40. Good morning. It's 8:30. Bill Arnold here with you this morning. So glad you're listening. It's Monday, and I hope you had a nice weekend. We've got a lot of news to cover today, and we're going to go to it right now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News as to what's going on in mission work around the world. Be back in a minute.
And life together.
There was a very long stretch of time, medical needs within our family, back and forth to the hospital, listening to the radio in those times. You just are looking for God to say, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm with you. I've not forgotten you. You're going to make it. I'll be there. Faith Radio was that. I would say to anyone with confidence that Faith Radio delivers real people who are truly exploring real faith in real God, and they'd find it there.
Faith Radio.
Minutes until the top of the hour. Are you dealing with like a wounded heart today? Dr. Dan Allender is a counselor and author. He says many people minimize or don't even acknowledge their pain, which leads to them making bad choices.
Because God made us in a particular way, not only sexually, but also relationally, when we violate that, there will be consequences, even if you're not aware of it at first. And often the young women between 25 and 35 that I've worked with who have that level of indifference, when they eventually begin to tear back that who cares, there is immense grief and hurt and anger that they are now addressing in a new way. And that's hopeful, because the closer you get to the bone of our own heartache and shame, the more you can see the presence of God.
That is Dr. Dan Allender. You can go to our website, myfaithradio.com. If you'd like to hear that entire interview, type into our new and improved search engine, Dr. Dan Allender, or Healing a Wounded Heart. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News is on the studio line already. Be back in a minute.
If you're picking up drive-thru coffee on your way to work this morning, tell them Bill says hi. He's from the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
The threats to our religious freedom just keep on coming. This is Jim Garlow. In a May 25th, 2017 news item, two Minnesota filmmakers were in court to halt the enforcement of a state law. The interpretation being, if they're going to use their talents to produce films celebrating marriage between one man and one woman, they must also use their talents to promote same-sex marriage. And if the couple refuse to comply, they are violating the law and subject to fines, even jail. What? It's outrageous to think that these filmmakers would be threatened with fines and possibly jail for simply following their own conscience and faith and the definition of marriage for the last 5,000 years. First and foremost, we can't allow ourselves to be intimidated into doing nothing and saying nothing. Ephesians 6, verses 10 through 19 reminds us that if we are a follower of Christ, we are in a battle and we better prepare ourselves for it. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Boldly go where no one has gone before.
And that music, of course, belongs to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. Among the many things I admire about Ruth Kramer is she knows how to accurately pronounce the names of people and places around the world. Ruth, good morning. It's true, you do. You always nail these. I always look at these names and places and I go, I don't know how to say this.
Oh, man. It's funny that you say that because I sent your producer an outtake of a day last week where I was trying to pronounce the name of a church leader in Mongolia. And it was not easy.
You seem to do really well, though. You got a lot of confidence. I'm reading about this first story now in India. This has gotten to be quite interesting. It's more than just a political contest. It's really a battle for human rights. And Prime Minister, help me with this one. What's his name?
Well, just call him the Prime Minister.
Yeah. Well, see, you make it easy. I'm trying to come up with his name. Ram Nath Kovind?
Kovind?
Yeah, okay, there you go. All right, let's talk about this story to get things started.
Well, it's been kind of an interesting situation. You know, we talked about it extensively when the prime minister was elected, Narendra Modi, and he is known as a leader of the BJP party, which is the Hindu Nationalist Party in India. And over the weekend, I shouldn't say over the weekend, last week, the governor of Bihar state, the Ram Nath Kovind, was elected as the country's president. The thing that we're concerned about with this, and it's something to watch, is that Kovind is also actively involved with the BJP. He is active with the Hindu nationalist movement in the state, in the country, and has been pushing for a lot more of the anti-conversion legislation that is right now on the books in about 5 states in India. So we're talking about religious freedoms that are probably going to be more at risk. There hasn't really been a huge movement on adding anti-conversion laws in different states. And what this actually means, you know, they're called the Freedom of Religion Acts in the states that actually have them, which they include like Chhattisgarh, Orissa, Gujarat, Himachal Pradesh, and Madhya Pradesh. And a couple of other states have been considering it, like Maharashtra. And Bihar has also been talking about it, but they haven't actually moved to actually put a proposal or a resolution or a bill actually into words. But with the idea of the rising nationalism and the Hindu nationalism that comes with that, the concern is that more states that are sympathetic to the BJP will consider putting a Freedom of Religion Act into place. Usually what that means is that the religious minorities in India, which would be the Muslims and the Christians, will fall most afoul of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It has been used mostly to club the Christians over the head. It sparked a lot of really serious violence with the Muslims in some of the bordering states. And I think the concern that we want to have here expressed to your listeners is we are asking you to pray. We always ask you to pray. But in this case, we're asking you to pray for wisdom for the Christian leaders, those who are serving the body of Christ, those ministries that are involved with, you know, coming alongside and resourcing the body of Christ, because what's going to change now will be significant. It's not just going to be the anti-conversion laws, but under Modi's prime minister's regime, we've seen a couple of different ministries have to pull out of the country because the financial laws have changed to the point where getting money into the country is impossible. So you may be aware of the situation with Compassion International, where they had to close their project down for the entire country because of the financial the way they get the money into the country. Any of these NGOs now that are funded from outside of India, particularly North America, are running into some serious difficulties on funding issues. And some of them have had to kind of go to bartering situations. So they're bartering services for food or bartering services for resources, things that you would use your money for anyway. But it's a runaround because it's not a permanent solution. Mm-hmm. With the leadership the way it is and its ideology, there are things that are going to be very, very challenging for believers in the days to come. So, you know, the interesting thing was that the new president is actually a Dalit. He is from the Untouchables cast. And so to rise to this length, this height of power, says a lot about how the caste system might be changing, but there's still a lot of pressure against the religious minorities in India. So there's much to consider for prayer for wisdom. Pray for creativity, because a lot of these Christian leaders are going to have to come up with a way to keep things moving without obvious connections to outside. And they're going to have to be real creative about how they go about living and sharing the hope of Christ, because a lot of things are really going to be changing with how the government will be cracking down on things.
Ruth, these are obviously significant problems, especially if funding is getting stopped getting into the country. Obviously, none of this is too difficult for God, so prayer is obviously something we need to stay focused on for sure.
Yeah, you know, Open Doors has been consistently putting this in front of people and sharing different ways to be praying, encouraging people to pray in boldness, because, you know, we got to believe that God can do and that God will do, because this, you know, sharing the hope of Christ and allowing people to be introduced to who Jesus Christ is as their Savior is obviously something that follows within the Great Commission, which is part of God's will. And so, you know, there are so many promises in Scripture about what happens when we act in obedience in accordance to God's will. So pray to that end. Pray for just not only the boldness to live their faith out and the creativity to come up with ways to be able to continue to do so, but ask for the impossible. Ask for the open doors to stay open so that more work can be done.
And I love the fact that you said pray in boldness, because that's going to stick in my brain all day, whether it's just for the people in India or if it's for anything else I have to pray for in my life. Pray in boldness. That's a great, great word. Ruth, I'll take a little break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. I'm talking to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be right back. Good morning. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm talking to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. I just felt like in that last segment you were showing off a little bit, Ruth. You rattled off a whole bunch of places in a row. Just so you know, I feel like you were showing off a little.
Well, it was within the context of explaining some things, because usually what happens is I talk about states with anti-conversion laws, and somebody will ask me, what states have the anti-conversion laws? How many states in India have an anti-conversion law? So
yeah. No, you were spot on, just so you know. All right, let's talk about what's going on in Egypt. I know the leaders there are canceling summer trips because of security issues, and it's quite messy over there right now, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the threat from ISIS, we've talked about this on a number of occasions, the actual threat against Christians in Egypt is credible. So they sent out a video at the end of the spring and basically said, we're going to wipe everybody out.
Oof.
Christian, you're going to be a target. And a number of security groups within the country, including the National Security, their version of the National Security Bureau, warned a lot of the church leaders, the Coptic church leaders, the evangelical church leaders, pretty much anybody who has been recognized as a leader of Christian groups in Egypt, were gathered together and warned about the security threat. And it was strongly suggested that they shut everything down until the end of July, essentially. And my question to groups like Sat7 and Open Doors and Voice of the Martyrs was, what happens after July? You know, this whole three-week moratorium on stuff is to address a specific credible threat that was made against Christians. July is the big season where everybody's doing mission trips in Egypt and they're gathering for conferences and there's summer camps. And so obviously it's going to be a situation where you have a lot of people gathered together. So that's done. But that doesn't mean that the terrorists are going to be done with gathering believers as you know, the summer holidays continue. We still have another month or so before school starts again, before things fall into a normal pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens after July? And really, you know, that's Nobody knows. It's not necessarily going to be where they pick up where they left off and keep their August plans in place. A lot of conferences have been canceled or moved outside of Egypt. You've got a situation where the threat is credible enough that the Egyptian government has extended a state of emergency because of the insurrection that the Islamic State has presented. So there's a lot to be praying about, and you have some ministries like Sat7 who they're a Christian satellite television ministry to the Middle East and North Africa. So they still have things that they need to do, and they are still able to broadcast a platform that talks about hope, that talks about a different worldview, that encourages people to ask questions and call them with questions so they can start talking about what is true and what is not true. And it's all done with a biblical worldview. So the gospel comes into play with this, but it's not an overt kind of a thing because they are not trying to create a situation that is difficult for anyone. Mm-hmm. They want to introduce the discussion of what is true and what is not true according to what they believe, you know, the Bible says.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that are a little bit sticky. Ministries are asking you to pray. Sat7 is asking you to pray wisdom for their production staff because they still have a job to do. They have an office in Egypt, so it's not like they're not concerned about the security. I've been to that office before, and there's a lot of security to get in there, but they've increased. You know, they're just everybody's increasing the security measures if you're connected to ministry because of this situation.
Yeah. Ruth, I want to cover a couple stories before our time is up. Miriam Ibrahim, let's do an update on her. It's been 3 years since she's been released from prison, and yet she is not out of the woods yet, is she?
Not really. Miriam Ibrahim, the short version is she was a Christian in Sudan who was convicted of apostasy, sent to the death row mm-hmm. in jail. And she was basically facing a death sentence. A lot of believers were praying for her. She was released later. She was moved out of that area. I think she's in the U.S. now. She's kind of continued on with life. And 3 years later, she's using her experience to encourage people to be praying, to understand what their prayers do in the body of Christ, to advocate for the situations for the persecuted church in Sudan. The situation that she faces that is difficult is there's a continuous death threat over her. So she has to be very careful because even though she's out of the country, out of the situation, there are still people who want her dead because of what she represents. And there are people who are taking advantage of her with her story. People who are making money off of her story and hounding her for her story. So while she's trying to continue to raise awareness and be faithful to what God has called her to do with her story, she's having to fight off all of this other stuff on the side. So she's just basically saying it's difficult. There's a minor celebritydom that comes with this.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes she feels like she's hounded everywhere she goes. And unfortunately, it is true that people have taken advantage of her. So I guess what we want to say is, for her, it's a wonderful situation that she can be sharing today the things, the big things that God has done in her life, the big fingerprints about what happened through all of the situation with her years in jail, facing the death sentence, dealing with the apostasy laws, what God did through that story remains pure.
Yes.
That it remains one of those things where it calls people to God and lets people see what God is doing and how he is so faithful to answer prayer. And this other stuff that she's facing with the security threats and maybe just being taken advantage of, that she is surrounded by people who will help protect her from that, and that those who are taking advantage of her would just quit.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, let's wrap up our time with pure inspiration. Let's talk about the doctors going to Kenya. That's a great story.
Yeah, this is a great story out of Tennessee. There's a family that have doctors, Angela Maney and her husband Heath.
Heath,
yeah, we're doctors.
Medical school.
General surgeon and an OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
And living life, you know, in suburbia, and they had their two kids, and, you know, it's a good thing, you know, two incomes. And they had loved their church community. They loved serving their community. But I think they wound up kind of asking the question on a consistent basis, are we using our gifts and abilities for God's kingdom? Where are we using them for? Were we really using them?
Mm-hmm.
Were we just kind of being comfortable? Were we okay in being comfortable? And that question niggled at them because they didn't have an answer that they felt was a good answer. They were comfortable. Yes, there's nothing wrong with being comfortable. There's nothing wrong with contentment. In fact, contentment is a good thing, but maybe they were being called to something else, and they felt that they were being called to something else and just really weren't sure where God was directing them. So they joined up with World Gospel Mission, and things started kind of falling into place where they kept being drawn back to Kenya. And they wound up actually working with a hospital in Kenya, and in like 2004, they sold their house and they moved off to serve the people of Kenya in the Tenwick Hospital. And they kind of train African doctors who have a vision for service. They disciple them. They are kind of a teaching hospital in that area. So it's a connection with the mission, World Gospel Mission, and Africa Gospel Church. And it's a sending organization in that sense because they're training the healers and the physicians to be able to go out and make a difference. I think what is interesting here is they started with prayer, and then they really were praying that with confidence in what God was leading them to do. And the next step from confidence and obedience was hearing from God. And
that's awesome.
Making a decision, having effective results, yeah. And now they have authority to say what they're saying.
I love the story. Ruth, thanks so much for being with us. Have a great week. I'll talk to you again in a few.
You too.
You bet. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, we have a great second hour coming up. You're going to want to stay tuned. Be back for hour two in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.